Salam sejahtera, anda bersama saya Reza Zulkapli dan ini Niaga Awani. Bank Dunia akan lancar The Malaysia Economic Monitor June 2021 Edition Weathering the Surge pada jam 9.30 pagi ini. Saya berkesempatan menemubual naib Presiden Serantau Bank Dunia sebelum pelancaran berkenaan untuk mendapatkan pandangan Bank Dunia tentang peningkatan kes baru COVID-19 di Malaysia dan juga Asia Tenggara. Antara intipati perbincangan adalah berkenaan perbelanjaan kerajaan dan kesan ujian serta vaksinasi kepada pemulihan ekonomi. Saksikan temubual saya bersama naib Presiden Serantau Bank Dunia untuk Asia Timur dan juga Pasifik, Victoria Kwakwa. Victoria, thank you for joining us. Victoria, first of all, what is the impact of the surging COVID-19 cases on individuals and businesses right now?
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to have this opportunity to share some thoughts on the current situation in Malaysia. What we've seen is that at the end of May, there was a significant surge in the number of daily new cases, going as high as 7,000 a day. And per capita, both in terms of the new cases and in terms of mortality and fatality, these numbers in Malaysia were higher than even in countries across the other countries across the region and even in India. So clearly, this was a worrisome situation. As of today, what I understand is that the number of daily cases has fallen to about 5,000. So it's good that the movement is in the right direction. But Malaysia is not out of the woods yet. Now, this increase in cases, of course, it impacts people's health. The health system is strained to capacity. I think at the height of the surge, intensive care units that were handling COVID patients were at least at 90% capacity, leaving much less room to address other health needs of the general population. It brings uncertainty to people and to businesses. You know, we've done some work on a Business Pulse survey. And what we found was that whereas in October 2020, more than half of all businesses were operating fully, I think it was about 52%, and just 38% were functioning partially. In January, February, we had over 52% functioning only partially, and a smaller percentage functioning fully. So it impacts businesses as well. They are forced to cut wages, and also it impacts their liquidity. We found that on average, the businesses had about barely 5 months of cash flow, which is much lower than businesses in other countries in the region, Vietnam being about 6 months and Indonesia being even higher at around 9 months. So impacts the health system, impacts the health and well-being, creates of people, creates a lot of uncertainty and certainly impacts businesses. Thank you.
Also, perhaps you can share with us, has this also increased vulnerable households? Because you spoke about businesses and also how that has affected the healthcare system, right? But what about the households?
Yes. I think that what's happening with businesses impacts households and impacts livelihoods, because if businesses aren't functioning at all or not functioning fully, then it impacts the ability of people to work and the ability of household heads to earn the incomes that they need to feed and sustain their families. So as I mentioned, we've seen some businesses reduce wages or even cut back hours on workers. This means household incomes are reduced, so the vulnerable are in an even worse situation. And I must say that what we found in Malaysia, as well as in other countries, is that the most vulnerable are the ones that are the least equipped To cope with the pandemic and the impacts. And a large extent as well, they're not getting as much support as other segments of the society. And so, yes, it is a hit on the more vulnerable groups in the society. Our sense is that more people are poorer than they were before the pandemic, or even have not been able to escape poverty, which would have been some of what we expected in a region like East Asia and also in Malaysia, which are countries and a region that was doing quite well. So it's adversely impacting the vulnerable people. We're seeing that there's rising food insecurity. Children from poorer households are less able to learn with their school closures and the worse off access to internet facilities. And more vulnerable populations have less access to some of the regular health services that were provided pre-COVID.
Share with us, because right now Malaysia is administering around 200,000 doses of vaccines per day. What is the direct economic impact of increased testing and also vaccination rates? Is this a sure or the best solution to the current resurgence of COVID-19 cases in this country?
Well, we know from our research and what we've seen empirically in other countries that strategies to find, to test and to trace and treat cases is the best way to proceed. What we've, in our own analysis, we found that if you do 1,000 new tests, additional tests per positive case, then the evidence shows, the data shows that you're able to increase by 1 percentage point output growth. So there's a clear positive correlation from a strong and a solid testing and tracing regime. So we certainly recommend the countries continue to keep testing, tracing and testing at the center of their strategies, of course, alongside vaccination, because vaccination is also very, very important. So vaccinations alone don't do it. You need the testing. The testing will give people more confidence so they can step out and do more of the activities. If they know that people have been tested and they're not positive, that helps, support the recovery and the reopening of economy. So testing is really important and needs to continue.
Victoria, let's talk about financial assistance to support people. What do you think is the best financial assistance needed right now to support people and to also ensure that it is also sustainable to government revenue and also spending?
Sure. Thank you very much. Look, in terms of crises, governments have to do what they are called to do as governments, to support the populations, particularly the most vulnerable, and to catch those who might fall through the cracks. And so undoubtedly, in times like this, you're going to have more spending than what would typically be required and a bit of fiscal stress. Now, fiscal policy ideally should look at least three phases: relief, recovery, and growth. And so what we've seen in several of the countries is that in the first instant, the focus has been very much in terms of providing relief through safety net measures, social protection measures, and also through short-term relief to businesses and firms. And all of that is good. But now, as countries are beginning in this, as we come to this time of the crisis, more greater focus on recovery, which means that maybe making government support a bit more targeted to firms that can survive, targeted to firms that can contribute ultimately to growth, and being a bit more targeted in the support, but also not forgetting that some support will continue to be needed For people in the bottom 40% and also with small and medium scale enterprises. So the support going forward needs to do both sides, but I think that for the recovery element of it, greater targeting to potential contributors to growth is certainly needed. And that in itself over time will help with the revenue situation as growth rebounds and government is better able to raise revenues.
Perhaps just a bit more on that, Victoria, yeah? Because I think many governments are a bit worried about accumulating debt right now. Maybe in general, in the Southeast Asia or the Asian region, region itself, do you think that government debt especially is a bad word right now during the pandemic, or can the government spend a bit more to help with the three phases that you mentioned earlier?
Sure. Look, I think different countries and different governments have different capacities. You know, of course, there are some that have a bit more capacity than in others. I would generally say if you look at the spending, the fiscal impulse or the fiscal stimulus that governments are putting into the system as a share of GDP, I think there still is a bit of scope to do a little bit more to shore up not just the to shore up recovery and ultimately growth. So, and this is also a time when interest rates are relatively low. So that should help. Having said that, I don't think it means that government should just totally forget that debt needs to be taken care of, looked at very carefully, and managed well over time. So I would say, I think that quite a few governments do have some room to perhaps spend a little bit more, but keeping an eye out and having a strategy on how they would come out of the expansion and how they would begin to look at the debt trajectory and move it in the right direction. I don't think it's impossible for countries to regain the lost ground in terms of higher debt. I think it is conceivable. Countries in the region have generally managed very well on the macroeconomic front, you know, had kept debt in check. And I'm sure that as the economies recover, they have the potential to go back to a path of greater fiscal sustainability and more moderate debt.
Victoria, looking over the past year, how have countries in the region managed their pandemic recovery? What are some of the critical lessons that Malaysia could perhaps take from them? ASEAN-wide, have the measures announced by the ASEAN members worked well?
Well, you know, the good news is that East Asia is the first region that is seeing a rebound. You know, but a rebound does not necessarily mean a recovery. And the other thing that is noteworthy is that the experience has varied from country to country. In fact, what we've seen is that it's perhaps only China and Vietnam that have had a V-shaped recovery, you know, and have had their growth in 2020, perhaps a little bit the same as what was projected before the COVID or a little bit higher. So you have those two economies. For the large majority of the countries, Thailand, Indonesia, Philippines, and Philippines and Malaysia, it's been lower than pre-COVID or what would have been expected, with the biggest gap in the Philippines, you know. So the Philippines shock, growth shock has been quite significant. Now, so the experiences have been different. What are some of the lessons? We found that the countries that have done relatively well are countries that really were able to manage and get the pandemic in control in some shape or form, or to some extent, or to a good extent, including by using strong testing, tracing, isolation, and treating strategies. You know, and that allowed them to reopen and, or at least to allow economic activity to go on. So that was one factor. We also find that it's been those countries that have leveraged the increase in export possibilities, particularly of electronic goods, the demand for which has increased over the pandemic period. I think that has been one factor as well that has been important in success. And then for countries that have not done as well, you know, there have been countries that have struggled to come on top of the controlling the pandemic and therefore have had to resort to stringent lockdowns, which has meant that economic activity has taken longer to rebound. And there also have been the countries that have not had as much fiscal space to support, you know, whereas countries that have done a little bit better have also had a little bit more fiscal space. So these are some of the things that come out. Clearly, the approach to the pandemic and managing it is really important. And that's why right now, as I said before, the testing and tracing is important. But now that we have vaccines, the vaccination programs are also equally important. In Malaysia, I understand that up till now, we have about 4.2 million doses that have been given. This is great. The program needs to continue to speed up so that more Malaysians can be vaccinated, and the vaccination does provide protection, you know, and so combining that with the testing and tracing and isolation as needed, I think will be good or will really help countries get on top of the pandemic and reopen as planned so that economic activity can take off again and we can have people going back to work, the more vulnerable protected, and Malaysia moving forward towards its objective of becoming a high-income country, which we have every confidence Malaysia can achieve.
On that note, we thank you very much for joining us, Victoria.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.